Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan, and in this episode, I'm joined by my coworker Madeline as we interviewed Susan Inches. Sue is an author, educator, and environmental advocate who's written a phenomenal book called Advocating for the Environment: How to Gather Your Power and Take Action. We know that climate change is an urgent matter. This book skips the gloom and doom and offers ordinary citizens an accessible guide to taking action and enacting change. Madeline and I had such an inspiring chat with Sue, and I can't wait for you to listen and also be inspired. Enjoy!
Hi, Sue Inches. How are you?
I am doing well this morning. Thank you.
I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So you have written a book about climate change. I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit about your background and a little bit about what you do.
Oh, sure. Yes. So I've actually been a professional environmental advocate. I was a lobbyist in the Maine State Legislature on a number of environmental issues. I still do that work now as a volunteer, but I was actually doing it professionally in the past. And have worked on many issues, have organized quite a bit, have worked with a lot of nonprofit organizations as well, and really sort of realized that maybe I could share some of what I've learned over the years in a book. So that's how I came to write a book about this. I realized, you know, a lot of people probably don't know much about advocacy. A lot of people are afraid of it. So I thought I would kind of take the fear out of it and show ordinary people what it's about and how they can participate.
I love that, which is the perfect segue. If you could talk, give us the elevator pitch for your book.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are lots and lots of books out there that tell us everything that's wrong with our environment, right? I mean, the climate crisis is looming. It's real. There's also a crisis with toxic chemicals going on. There's also a problem with land preservation as we, you know, eat up more land with development. We also know that the ocean is full of plastic. So there's plenty of books and information about everything that's wrong. But what I thought was there's almost nothing out there about what ordinary citizens can actually do about it. And so that's the gap that I saw. And I thought, you know, I could write a guidebook that would help ordinary citizens know the things, the power they have and the things they can do to address these problems. And so that's the pitch. And I went to a publisher with that idea and was picked up by a really good publisher who agreed with me, you know, this is a needed book to put out there. So that's how I came to write the book.
I love that. Madeline here is one of our sort of nonfiction experts in the bookstore. You know, we all have our niche. And when you sent me your book, I was like, Madeline, look, do you want to read the book and talk to Sue? And so I think I'm going to toss it over to Madeline a little bit because they had some great thoughts about the book.
Great. So, yeah, I loved it. I think it's the perfect guide that everyone needs. I think it'd be especially helpful in environmental clubs at school or such, because it's such a daunting task to feel so small and look at this ever-growing list of issues. But you give it step by step of what needs to be done, and it's so beautifully written that I felt so inspired reading it and that I could actually make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, my belief is that if enough people come together, if we can create critical mass around a caring economy and a clean environment, we can actually change the world. And it's happened before, and it's really time. It's time for us to do it again. So yeah, I'm so glad to hear that you found it inspiring in that way.
I really appreciate the optimism because I feel like so often in discussions of climate change, it's very scary. It's very doom and gloom. And like, look at all the things that have happened and there's no hope, but you have hope, right? Like,
I do have hope. I guess I'd call myself a realistic optimist because we can't deny the fact that, if we continue business as usual, that we could be in some very dangerous situations, particularly with climate issues. So I can't deny that. But optimism, as I say in the book, is actually a practice. You can actually practice optimism every day. And if you do that, and if you go back to your earth stories of where you connect to the earth, that's really motivating. And you need some optimism in order to keep moving forward and be motivated. So it's really an important thing to think about, you know, what we can do, what a beautiful future we possibly could have, and to be thinking about that. I mean, I'm so inspired by all the social movements out there, Black Lives Matter, and everything that's going on is saying we need a more equitable world. And that's all part of environmentalism. It's all connected. So I'm really very pleased to see the actions that are happening all over the world right now, that this could lead to a much better place for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And Madeline, you had, speaking of like all things are connected, that was something that really stuck out to you in the book.
So I've been thinking about it a lot in general, how nature and humans, we kind of think of it as two separate things, when in reality, we need to think of it as one thing, because we are all life. And it makes me think back to my biology classes and how for photosynthesis with plants, the products they produce in that are exactly what we intake for cellular respiration. And the products that we give off from that go exactly towards photosynthesis, and they're directly correlated. I think that's the perfect example to show that.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, we are connected. We are biological beings. You know, many people are living lives that are quite separate from nature, but that doesn't change the fact that we are biological beings and we are living in partnership with the earth. Although many people don't think of it that way, we really are. I mean, we can't survive without air and water and food, right? So, you know, we are living beings, and we sort of need to, I think, come to a new awareness about that. You know, people just kind of think that food's going to automatically appear in the grocery store, but actually that's not the case. I mean, in fact, we are, you know, abandoning farmland at a really high rate every year, because what we do is we farm it until there's no more nutrients left in the soil. We don't put anything back. And that's driven by profit. It costs more to put back into the soil. So instead, what our agribusiness does is it uses up the nutrients and then moves to another place to do agriculture. And this is not sustainable. We can't do that indefinitely. We've been able to get away with it for a while. You know, especially here in this country, the soils are quite fertile. That's not the case in a lot of places in the world. So we have to figure out, if we're going to sustain life, we have to figure out, you know, a more sustainable way of doing everything, which includes agriculture.
Mm-hmm. So there's the giant threat of climate change, obviously, and your book gives us some things that we can do. Do you want to touch on just like a few of the things, like for my listeners, like what are some things we can start doing at home?
Okay, so this is interesting. So my book isn't really focused on what you can do in your home. It's more focused on what you can do to influence public policy.
Right.
But having said that, we have to do it all, right?
True.
You know, we do need to be more conscious in our home and our practices. We do need to do things like drive less and combine all our errands into one trip, you know, things like that. Use cloth shopping bags instead of single-use plastic. I mean, there's all those things we need to do. For sure. But we also need to be engaged in public policy. And I realize that not everyone, you know, is comfortable or warms up to that. But there are little things you can do in your life. Like, for example, you know, if you are a landscaper, you can advise your clients not to use toxics on their lawn. If you are a restaurateur or a cook or a chef, you can use locally sourced ingredients and explain why that's important. So there is like a role in advocacy for every person in whatever it is they're doing. So I encourage people to do that, because a lot of people are like, I will never go and talk to a legislative committee or a city council. And that's okay, because whatever it is you're doing in your life, you can be an advocate for the earth. So figure out like, what can you do in your own life that would support, you know, the future of our planet?
Yeah. And I think that's so important, because I do feel like my generation in particular, we have this like social anxiety, right? Where we're like, I don't want to call a senator. I don't want to like go out. But there have been these sort of like sneaky ways. So like, I don't know, do you know about ResistBot? Have you heard about this?
I haven't. No, tell me.
So this is perfect for millennials, because we hate making phone calls, right? And ResistBot came out, I want to say around 2016, like around the election, where it was a text service and it would help you draft you know, an email, and it would email your senators, your congresspeople for you. And then it exploded and it grew, and it will do things now where it will leave voicemails on your behalf. It will send emails, it will text. And so I think a huge step for people to take is to just start somewhere, just figure out, like, start brainstorming. What are things that I can do as a bookseller? What are things that I can do as whatever your career may be? And I think your book is inspirational in that way of like, oh, you know what? I actually do X, Y, and Z, and I have these contacts, and I bet I could talk to them about this, that, and the other thing and start making change. And so because I do think, like, again, with these big climate change discussions, it can often be like the only thing you can do is call your senators. And that, you know, for someone with social anxiety, they're going to be like, no. So I really appreciate your approach in this book to be like, okay, that's great, but it's not the only thing.
Right, exactly. And you can be really creative. And I love the resist bot idea. That's a great place to start. I'll tell you a little bit story about some of my Colby College students. So we have an issue in Maine where we're trying to get environmental rights added to the state constitution. And as it turned out, the Republican representative from Waterville, where Colby College is located, he said to us, well, I haven't heard from any constituents on this, so why should I support it? And I immediately jumped on that. And so I talked to my students at the college, and I said, I need you guys to contact this representative about this environmental rights. So here's what they did. They wrote handwritten notes. I told them handwritten notes and letters are actually more impactful than emails because they get seen. So the students wrote handwritten notes, like 5 or 6 of them did this. And then they drove to the representative's house in town and put them in the mail slot in the door of his house.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? And I know they got seen. And I know the guy cannot say to us, I haven't heard from any constituents about this issue anymore. He can't say that. So there's a really easy, and it's not socially scary, right? All they did was they tiptoed up onto his porch, front porch, and stuck him in the door and then ran away. I mean, that's what they did. And it was really great. So there's an example of how you can be creative and you can get through all of the, you know, the lobbying and the email, mass emails, and all that stuff is not really as effective as doing something like those students did. So you can do that.
I love that. I love your students. That's amazing.
Yeah, they're great. They want to help. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, we used to, you know, in pre-COVID times, there was a group, and I apologize, I can't remember what the group was, but they would come in and have letter writing parties in our cafe, and they would sit and they would like handwrite letters to send to Congress or whoever their leaders. And I just loved it. They were delightful and they always seemed like they were having a great time.
And that's another great way to do it, is do it with a group of friends. You know, you don't have to be by yourself in this. And letter writing parties are fun like that. And sometimes, you know, you can even have like a template, you know, where you kind of like, you write your letter, but there's a guide to follow of how to write it. So it makes it really easy. You just put it in your own words, but here's what you say. So yeah, so that's another great example of a creative way of making a difference and having fun doing it. I mean, advocacy can be fun, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, we should be like having fun doing that. Like, we're trying to save our planet. Like, that's a good thing. We want to save the planet.
It's everyone.
There's no downside to saving the planet.
That's correct. And it is going to take citizen action to do it, because what we're up against is a lot of corporations that are sometimes not honest about what they're really doing.
Right.
You know, for example, the fossil fuel industry has been, you know, they create all these like, quote unquote, citizen groups for the environment, while behind the scenes, what they're doing is actually increasing the amount of oil and gas extraction. It's increasing right now, even though they have these organizations, that make them look good. It's actually not the case. So we're kind of up against that. Yeah. But real citizens actually have more power than corporations do, because real citizens can actually connect with the heart of decision makers. They can make a human connection. And so that's where the power is, in that human connection that you make, you know. So, you know, the students putting the letter in the doorway, that definitely made a connection.
I love that. Before we start wrapping up, is there anything that you would like to let our listeners know? Is there anything we should know?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I guess that my main message is how important it is to act and how simple it can be. You can act within your own daily life. Advocacy, another part that I talk about sometimes is that, you know, advocacy is a pretty broad thing. You can do it through artwork. You can do it through blogging. You can do it through all sorts of things. It's not the same thing as direct action. Direct action is when people take to the streets. So advocacy in a nutshell is creating a connection with a decision maker. You're trying to reach the heart of a decision maker through a note or a letter or a piece of artwork or whatever. So that's what advocacy is. Direct action is making a public statement. And it's usually done because an issue needs to be raised. You know, Black Lives Matter needed to be raised at a higher level. It needed media attention so that we could all understand what the issue was. So both are really important, but they're different things. And so I just say, I talk about that and I say, you know, different people are cut out for different kinds of things. And so like I have a really close friend named George Lakey. He's also an author. He loves direct action. He told me in September, he said, I was in a grandparents march for climate change. And he said, I got arrested for the 22nd time. And he was like really proud of this, right? I mean, this is very cool for him. And I'm like, I would never want to be arrested. That's my thing, you know, but I'm so glad he does that, right? So what I do is I talk to legislators and I talk about, you know, the heart-based part of these issues and why it's important. So, you know, just to make that point that everybody's different, but we need everybody. And I guess that would be my major point. Everybody has to participate in changing the planet. It's that big a deal. It's kind of like a world war in the sense that everybody needs to contribute in their own way in order to get where we need to go. So I guess that would be, if it was one thing to say, it would be, you know, everybody needs to find their own path to advocacy. And the book has kind of got a lot of ideas about how to do that.
For sure, for sure.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Madeline, did you have anything else you wanted to
say? I don't think so.
Awesome.
I am inspired and I never really thought of doing anything like this before because it sounds so scary and like an intense amount of work. Mm-hmm. But I can write a letter. I can do that.
Right. Yeah. We can start small and.
Yep. Small things make a difference. So yes, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sue, thank you again so much for being here. We've got your book here, Advocating for the Environment. I'm going to put links in the show notes and I'll also link to your website and some resources for folks. Thank you so much.
Yep. I do have a newsletter as well. So if people
wonderful.
It comes out every month. I just talked about Glasgow, the big climate summit in the one released yesterday. So people could go to my website and sign up for that if they're interested.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Well, have an awesome day.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye. Thanks again to Sue Inches for chatting with us. And thanks to Madeline for joining me. Advocating for the Environment is available now. I'll link to it in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!